This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure. We will be sure. Oh, glory, glory, oh, glory, glory.
Hands to the heavens, no man, no weapon formed against, yes, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, his spirit is revisiting us. True and living, living in us. Resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots, we on the ground. The camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours, oh, one day.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. You know my voice already, it's Levan Miller. Thank you so much for joining me. Thank you so much for letting me join you. I don't have a clue what you're out there doing 11 o'clock today, but whatever it is, you are doing. I'm happy that you're doing that, you decided to do that, do with me. I do have a friend in studio this morning. I know you all want to talk about the fashionista affair yesterday. We're talking about that tomorrow. Don't kill me today. I have that planned for tomorrow. I am going to talk a little bit about the speech from the throne later on in the show, but I've invited some of my friends to come. They were here with me last week, and believe this or not, for whatever it was worth, people were calling my phone because they found the show titillating. So I invited them back. Last week, they had a motorcade. It was a good old Baptist kind of motorcade. It was really good. And you remember Reverend Wood was with me, and so was Mr. Charles Sawyer. They were with me. And Prince William is having an anniversary, and I am a Falcon, all right? And we've been letting sack people run the place for 5 years, I figure. I could have 1 week, right? So I brought my friends back. I'm going to talk to them for the first half of the show. And then in the second half of the show, we'll talk a little bit about the speech from the throne. Why it's called the speech from the throne. But I want to play a little game of here is what they say. And I want to know what is it we heard. So, you know, they say something, right? And I always tell people, here is how I tell whether or not an idea is a good idea or a bad idea. The minute I hear it, my brain actually says that is really stupid. If it's a bad idea. If it's a good idea, when I hear it, my brain says, wait a minute. Let's see how we make that work, right? And so I heard some stuff in the speech from the throne yesterday that raised my eyebrow. And then I heard some things in the speech from the throne yesterday that I thought to myself, that doesn't say anything. But I have to admit, I didn't hear anything from the speech from the throne yesterday that I instantly thought to myself, well, that's really stupid. So maybe it was a good speech from the throne. Well, then we'd have to consider the implications then from the now leader of the opposition who says, well, it'd have to be a good speech from the throne. All they do is copy and paste ours. So, you know, that's why it was so good. If it wasn't for us, they wouldn't have no plan. And since they rehash our plan, their speech was good. And then, of course, there's the former minister of state who says, listen, they ought to be thankful because we did such a smashingly good job that they don't really have nothing to do. They could just come right in, follow our plans, and boom, governance should be the absolute most easiest thing for them. So we'll talk about that a little later on in the show. The game is going to be, here is what they say versus here is what we heard. All right? And we'll see if we could chop that up a bit on the second half of the show. But this morning, I am joined in studio with a former Falcon. Well, you can't ever be a former Falcon. He's a Falcon. Because once he's a Falcon, he's a Falcon for life, right? in my incarnation of the school, we actually transitioned it a little bit. They used to call us the Dirty Birds, right? Because they
Dirty Birds.
Yeah, they. I don't know. But we wore that title with pride and glee, and wherever we went, oh, we was happy to let them know that the Dirty Birds from deep south was in the building, and they couldn't beat us. They couldn't beat us at nothing. Basketball. I don't care if we was playing marbles in the yard. They couldn't beat us. We let that other school have track. Because we, you know, no man flee except, you know, the wicked flee when, you know
no man pursue it.
Yeah, unless you know the scripture. All right. So, obvious, good morning. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for asking. So, you were at the motorcade on Sunday?
Yes,
what
I was.
What was it like?
It was very, very jovial. Mm-hmm. And it was over rather quickly. But we had a fairly good turnout, mm-hmm. and it was good to see some of the younger, and I refer to the younger folks. But the Dirty Bird spirit is still there, although I'm a Falcon.
You're a Falcon.
Yeah, you got the Dirty Bird some years after.
Yeah. So I know that there's more festivities involved. So there is something happening on Sunday.
Yeah, that's a church service. I think it's at the, and I don't want to be giving out incorrect information.
The William Thompson Auditorium, that's where it's supposed to be.
Jane Street.
Okay. Uh-huh. And do you know who the speaker will be? There's supposed to be two speakers. Okay. So does the church service culminate all of the events, or will there be more events after that? Or is there going to be like some sort of way that, you know, Falcons or Dirty Birds could all kind of... How do we stay in touch after this? Like, what's next?
Well, you know, we do, in fact, have an old students association right now. And we have a WhatsApp. Mm-hmm. And that encompasses all of the years, the various years, from 61 mm-hmm. straight on up to the present. And then each class... Well, some of the class, they have their own individual chats to stay in touch. My class is the class of 73.
73.
Yes.
So you and Mrs. Sawyer would have been together.
But
you would have been after Reverend Wood.
Yes. Yeah. after. not so way after.
How did you find your way to Prince William, though? Because, you know, they talked about, the last weekend they were here, they talked about the challenges many people had with getting into schools and getting into private schools. And I know you say you're a Bantown boy, but did you go to Prince William because of Lucat?
No, let me give you the history of it, at least my school. Mm-hmm. The first school I attended was Quarry Mission School. Quarry Mission School. Mm-hmm. That was on Nassau Street on the border of Chippenham.
Okay.
When I moved to Coconut Grove, I went to Southern Prep Number 1. That's on Wolf Road. It's now Stephen Dillett.
Okay.
And I lived in the Grove. I transitioned from Southern Prep to Weston Junior. Mm-hmm. From Weston Junior, I'd finished all grade 4, going into grade 5. I attended Harold Road, which was the former Southern Senior. They moved from Centerville, Wolf Road, down to Harold Road. Mm-hmm. I stayed there for about 3 years or so, and I passed the common entrance test for Prince William. But I was living in Coconut Grove when I went to Prince William, and that was in 1968.
That's amazing how they used to name these schools, Southern Senior,
Southern Senior, Western Senior, and Western Junior, and Eastern Senior, Eastern Junior. Those were the public schools, government schools at the time.
What was it like to be going to Prince William? You know, it was new. It was, you know, there was, you know, it started off as a theology school. So, you know, you start going there. Everybody think you won't be a pastor. What was it like?
Well, it was actually, from the historical perspective, it was actually both. Mm-hmm. It was for general education. Mm-hmm. And also, in addition to the general education, it was for the theology. Mm.
Yeah. So did you transition in the south with the school? You all ended up South Beach, right? You were in that transition to South Beach.
I was the first, we were the first class there. It transitioned to South Beach from 72 73, that's when South Beach really commenced.
Okay.
So I did 1 year at South Beach.
Okay. How is the I know the alumni. How old is the Alumni Association now?
This association, we've had several births and deaths.
Okay.
Put it like that.
Okay. So but this one is another. You all believe in resurrection power.
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
go ahead.
Because we have tried on any number of occasions to establish a consistent association. Mm-hmm. But this one now with the chat on WhatsApp has been the longest sustainable one.
Okay.
Other than that, our sustainability came through the various years. You had a core group of persons who stayed in touch with each other.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. And you said you're not really sure what the plans are after this, but you know that you all intend to, I guess, make it annually, I guess?
We will have to do a post-mortem of all of this and see whether or not it is, in fact, feasible. Mm. But specifically, we are celebrating our 60th year in existence, mm-hmm. Prince William.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So the church service on Sunday, what are you expecting? I mean, you think it's going to be, it must be interesting to run into old friends, eh? What do you think that's going to be like? How often do you see them?
Nassau, I was 21 by 7.
People go missing a long time.
Right? Yeah, and we are right on this island, right. 21 by 7, and you hardly see people. But mostly you stay in touch with persons in your year.
Because,
mm-hmm. We would have been, the Association of Prince William would have been scattered throughout the length and breadth of the Bahamas. So how often do you see people? It depends on where you go and what is what.
Do you remember the size of your graduating class?
We were about 20-something.
My goodness, 20. Wow.
Yeah,
I graduated, I think it was 93 at first, and then Leonardo was Reverend Sanders just put him out of the school. I don't know if he was expelled. No, I keep telling him, Reverend Sanders, he was no joke. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, he said, leave my school. And he meant that. He didn't give you no letter of expulsion or nothing. You just go. Your mommy done better don't bring you back here.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of, I think we got down, I think it's 91. But I'm willing to hedge my bet on 93.
Well, I may have misspoke, because when you asked the size of my graduating class, really my mind only reflected on the actual class. We had two streams of fifth form.
Yeah, 5-1 and 5-2. 5-2.
5-P and 5 and W.
Yeah.
So the combined would have been about under 50, thereabouts.
Yeah, it was about 90.
About 20-something. No, yeah, about 20.
And somehow they've been,
in each class.
They've been able to keep those small numbers. So like Prince William is a big, small school. So like you could go there from, you come off the brass and leave in the 12th grade. Mm-hmm. But the school is still pretty small. Like I know people 6 years my junior, 8 years my junior. It is funny now, right? Like, there is one lady, she's an actual woman now, that I think about all the time. When I was a sub-prefect, she was in the fifth grade, right? And, you know, sub-prefects were the prefects over the prefects in the primary school, right?
Yes,
so that's like prefect training. And then today I see her, right? And I remember when, I literally remember when this was a 7-year-old child or 8-year-old child. Yes. And at the time I was in the 11th grade, so she seemed like such a little person. But I see her now and I'm like, wow, this is an actual full-size woman. And the point I make is that, you know, so the school is big in that when you are in the reception, it looks like a big pawn, right?
Yes,
and then
you get
in grade 12 and you realize that this school isn't really that big. And, you know, even the space of the school, there's a lot of intermingling because the school's not that big.
No. Yes, something. You speak about the 12th grade.
Mm-hmm.
12th grade was never in our vernacular when I attended Prince William.
Mm-hmm.
We went from Form 1 to Form 5.
Same thing.
It's the equivalent. It's the equivalent. Our school, when I attended, I don't think we ever had 400 students in the entire school population.
Yeah.
We were about only maybe 350 or so max.
Wow.
Yeah. The classrooms were very small.
Yeah. And they are still relatively small for classroom sizes in this modern Bahamas. When I know we used to always have to have services at either the Salem Union, which I think seats 1,400 people, And we would all fit in there. Students, faculty, the principal, and the fellow driving the bus. Everybody could fit in Salem. And then we would have it at Yamacraw East again. And that I think they held somewhere like 900 people or something like that. So definitely all the students could fit. So the school was never so big that we couldn't fit into. Like I my sister though went to government school, right?
Yeah.
I don't know why my parents did that, but when I thought about their graduation, just the graduating class was almost the size of the whole of Prince William. Literally, literally, it's like 400 people graduating. And I often wonder, like, how do these people even know one another or staying in touch must be, because even today, I've been out of school 20 years now, and you cannot plan a social that 90 of us will show up to. It will never happen. Under no circumstance, no matter how much you plan it, no matter what plan it all year, best case scenario, you get about 20 of us, 21 of us. And so, and then of course you have the variations of the pockets, right? So you have like these seven may hang out all the time, or this seven may hang out all the time. But to get all 90, even at a funeral, you won't get all 90 of us together. And we have had people out of my graduating class that have died already.
Yeah, well, that has been, when I said we have been resurrected several times, that has, in fact, been a bit of a challenge in terms of running a big alumni association. But whenever you see a fellow Prince William graduate student, that spirit is still there.
Mm-hmm.
But somehow a challenge of getting everybody, like you say, to attend a particular function. Mm-hmm. There are some other schools that have stronger and to a lesser extent variations with their alumni, and I won't call their names.
They matter not in this instance.
No. But what we have is a very informative and interactive chat going. And we have persons who are in the United States who follow it as far as Washington, D.C., and our principal, Mr. Selvin Smith, mm-hmm. who was principal from 1968 to 1973.
Mm-hmm.
He's in Barbados. And we have a former teacher, Mr. Rupert Bury, the math teacher. He is also in South Florida.
Okay.
They all keep up and stay in and contribute to the chat.
Mm. Okay, and so Sunday, what time is the service so that we know?
I'm going to have to get back to you.
But it's going to be at the William Thompson Auditorium. That's on Jane Street.
Yes.
It's Sunday coming, the 10th.
Yes.
Okay. I think they said it was supposed to be at 1. I think that was the time I heard. But
It would be at a time that most people would be able to.
Okay. And we're looking forward to it being a kind of a big turnout. I should be there. I plan to.
You will.
Yeah,
be
I
there.
Plan to. I plan to. You know, my Saturday nights get a little rowdy. You know, I spend the whole week being very well behaved, but Saturday gets a little rough. We'll see.
Yeah.
But I'm a good Church of God boy. I was Church of God born, Baptist inculcated, right? Like so my granddaddy was with Church of God, and then I grew up in a Baptist school, and I tell people, blending the two together sometimes is an interesting thing. But, you know, I got to put on a suit, shade and tie, right? And I'll be there.
But Prince William, Prince William, the Baptist education has done a lot.
Absolutely.
For a whole lot of us in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And you go to a whole lot of churches here, the pastors would have cut their teeth in Prince William. We just lost one of the great...
Reverend Stewart.
Reverend Stewart.
Yeah, and I was shocked that he was 60. Like, I feel like Reverend Stewart was 60 when I was in school.
Well, he looked always young.
He looked the same way, yes. Right? But I feel like he's been doing it for so long. Like, I told somebody this week, I was like, it shocked me to know that, like, I thought as long as Reverend Stewart has, it must mean he was doing it when he was 9, because I don't ever know him as anything else. I now watch people as they, you know, they go from like lay minister, maybe like senior deacon. No, my whole life he was the Reverend Timothy Stewart. He was never anything else.
Right.
And well, so that was interesting. Yeah.
During my years then, I was upperclassman to Reverend Stewart.
Okay.
And then 72, 73, for lack of a bet, I think they chose me as head boy.
Okay.
So, you know, I had the opportunity of really molding.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he's a lot of what he became because he had the opportunity to drive past you.
Some of that.
I love people that make the Prince William. Who else is in your graduating class? 72.
73,
sorry.
Leslie Cartwright, Willa Mae Johnson, who was the head girl with me, Miss Greta Brown, Tessie Young. You would have seen Tessie Young, who was one of the teachers and I think the principal of the deaf unit.
Okay. Well,
one time she did the signing on...
on the news?
On the news,
okay.
Yeah. Garnet Ellis,
mm-hmm.
Charles Sawyer. There were a whole lot of them. Some of them we lost.
Was there anybody of note in the years behind you?
Of note?
Yeah, like people that weren't in your year, but you know them because of who they were. Okay.
Oh yeah, yes. Those if I start calling names,
we're not gonna have enough show for that.
We're not gonna have enough show, and then I'll have to be stretching my memory a bit too. But yeah, you know that great volleyball team that Prince William had, that dynasty we built, which we took even into the night league, and we were extremely victorious there. You have the late Carl Mintz, you have Leroy Fox, you have Leslie Cartwright, you have David Bullitt, you have Joey DeMerritt, and of course I played on that team also. Roger DeMerritt, Terrence King, Charles Thompson, who is a pastor in Bingham, in the United States.
Mm-hmm.
He played on with the undefeated Miami High School.
Okay.
And he played college in Houston. There were just so many. There's my cousin Joshua Sears.
Okay, yeah. I just learned last week that Josh Sears went to Prince. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we had Grace Hart, Alfred, Timothy's brother.
Yes, Alfred Stewart. Yeah. Me and his son went to school together.
Yeah, I mean, we have so many. Boots.
Hold on, wait, is it Alfred or Andrew? Andrew
Stewart. Andrew Stewart, that's younger.
Yeah, I went to school with Andrew Stewart.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, he was Timothy Stewart's nephew, he's his nephew,
yeah.
And I tell people all the time, when I was in school, like the children of Baptist preachers, right, particularly mm-hmm. the ones that came up in with Baptist inculcation,
yes,
they were like school royalty. So like, you know, I went to school with the Josies, they were like school royalty, right? Like
okay.
Like literally you didn't even know their name, they just said, that's Anna Josie. I was like, okay, like, I don't really know what that means, you know?
Yes,
yeah,
yes,
but
yes.
That's kind of how it was. So you grew up in those schools where the mommy and the daddy either came through the school system, and then they go off and became like Baptist ministers or Baptist preachers, and they sent their children back. And when their children came back, they were like school celebrities.
Yes. Sabrina Pinder, the wife of Reverend Carrington Pinder. Carrington Pinder was also a product of Prince William. We have Earl Miller. You have your own Jenny Thompson, who used to work for The Guardian some years ago.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
She's also at Prince William.
So they're reminding me here, the church service is going to be 3:30 p.m.
3:30.
That's going to be at the auditorium, Jane Street.
Okay.
Alfred Stewart will be the preacher. Carrington Pinder will also be the preacher.
Yes.
And Mario Moxie will anchor. And that's the class of 65, 70, and 86. Yes. See that? We got all kind of good preachers around here. That's my music, though. I'm going to the break. It's Levin Miller. Thank you very much for coming, Mr. Forbes. I'll be back after this.
Hey, did you find the show interesting? Do you want to be a part of the conversation? Well, sponsor Unleashed today. Call 302-2304 or 302-2375 to see which package is right for you. Join Levon Miller as he ignites the passion of the next generation by bridging the gap with engaging conversations and innovative ideas. Take action and sponsor Unleashed today at 302-2304 or 302-2375 and be unleashed.
October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Other than skin cancer, breast cancer is the most common cancer in women. Breast cancer is also the second leading cause of cancer death in women after lung cancer. Can you help? Yes, you can. You can encourage women to take steps to help lower their risk of developing breast cancer and help find it early, when it might be easier to treat. You can also help connect women facing breast cancer to patient programs and services they might need throughout their treatment. We encourage you to share these messages during Breast Cancer Awareness Month and throughout the year. 2021 has been a powerful reminder that we are all in this together, and our choices and actions have the power to protect the most vulnerable among us in a big way. By working together, we can inspire hope and become a force for good and help create greater awareness during Breast Cancer Awareness Month. To participate in our upcoming supplement, contact Guardian Media's advertising department or your account executive today.
The new Guardian Radio app is here. Listen live to all our Guardian Radio shows and live video stream select programs in our studio. Get information about Guardian Radio shows and our hosts. Send messages, including text, email, and even call. All from our amazing new Guardian Radio app. Download it free today in your App Store for your Apple device or Play Store for your Android device. The all-new and improved Guardian Radio app.
Hello, I am Brenda Smith, Senior Manager of Training and Development and Coordinator of the Vaccination Program Health at the Sunderland's Rehabilitation Center. For many persons, contemplating taking the vaccine can be daunting. But by getting the facts, you are placed in a better position to make an informed decision. I am happy to say that I am fully vaccinated. It was a decision I made after weighing the benefits of taking the vaccine versus the risk of not taking it. By getting vaccinated for COVID-19, I am not only protecting those I encounter, but also protecting myself from becoming very ill if exposed. I can't tell you how important that is for persons like me who have chronic health conditions like diabetes and hypertension. The trainer in me encourages you to learn the facts about the COVID-19 vaccine and compare the advantages and disadvantages. Remember, the greater numbers vaccinated, the greater opportunity for us to return to life as usual.
This message has been brought to you by the Public Hospitals Authority and the Sunderland's Rehabilitation Center.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back. Thank you for staying with me, Levin Miller here. I'm talking about the speech from the throne now. That's we're switching gears. So yesterday, we'll talk about the fanfare tomorrow. The lines are now open. You can give me a call, 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. I'm reading a speech from the throne. We're playing a game called What They Said Versus What We Heard, right? And the speech from the throne, it wasn't very long, quite honestly. It started kind of something like this. I'm going to read it. I'm going to stop as I read, just so you know what it was I heard when they said it, okay? And then you could call me and let me know if you agree with me, or you could text me. That may be better. Text me, 422-4796, because I want to try to get through as much as this is possible, all right? So it says, Madam President and Honorable Senators, Madam Speaker and members of the Honorable House of Assembly. Now, let me also stop and say this. They say that same line there several times. I'm going to skip over that every time after this time. I'm not going to repeat that whole thing every time. All right. Madam President and Honorable Senators, Madam Speaker and members of the Honorable House of Assembly. Just 20 days ago, my government was elected with a mandate to bring about a new day in our Bahamas. It is clear from the results of the election that the Bahamians demand transformational change. My government comes into governance with our country in the midst of mismanaged health and economic crises. My government is committed to work in partnership with other nations, with our local communities, and most importantly, with the Bahamian people to address the challenges that these crises pose. Today, my government proposes our blueprint for change. My government will consult and be inclusive in our decision-making. As a first priority, my government will therefore introduce legislation and policies to fully address future major health risks to avoid the need for emergency orders. I thought that that was a good thing. My government is committed to executing good governance established on the principles of transparency, integrity, and accountability. Madam President and Honorable Senators, Madam Speaker, and members of the Honorable House of Assembly, my government fully understands that we cannot resolve our country's economic crisis until we have resolved the health crisis. The COVID-19 crisis has exposed many of the weaknesses and vulnerabilities in our healthcare system. My government will make investments in healthcare infrastructure throughout the Bahamas and ensure that Family Island clinics are properly equipped, inclusive of the capacity for telemedicine. I want to stop right there. You see, this is the kind of stuff that I annoys me a little bit. I'll tell you why. If you know anything about me, you know that I'm the one that's been whipping and screaming around this place about the fact that 17 months in and hundreds of millions of dollars later, we still have people laying outside in the rain, hooked up to ventilators, waiting for the hurricane breeze to blow them away from underneath a tent, right? And if you go back circa 2013, 2014, when the Progressive Liberal Party was last the government of the Commonwealth of the Bahamas, you would know that they spent somewhere in the tune of about $21 million to build an edifice in Exuma, only for Minister of Health, former Dr. Dwayne Sands, to come back later and says, well, they built that big edifice and it wasn't furnished, etc., etc., etc. When you say to me in the speech from the throne, my government will make investments in healthcare infrastructure throughout the Bahamas, I want you to stop. Because I think that there needs to be a more tailored approach to that. I do not ever again in my life's history want to see an incident in life in this country where we have millions of dollars in investment that we have no plan on how to use it, no real strategy on how to add it to the fight, and no political will to agitate for it to be done. Because all of the politicians surrounding this kept telling me one thing. The people of Exuma say they don't want COVID on their island. The people of Exuma don't get to make that decision if the people of Exuma let me build the $20 million facility. If when I was building the $20 million facility, they said to me, oh yes, hallelujah, finally Exuma gets something, then when COVID hit and I need to use that as my COVID center because I need to take the burden of a PMH, then I need you all to sit with the same gleefulness, scream and shout hallelujah in the air, whipping and screaming and hollering, okay? All right, let's go on further. It says, my government will prioritize public health, wellness, health and wellness initiatives, and will move aggressively to introduce catastrophic healthcare insurance to make healthcare more affordable and to address the mental health issues in our country. I like that. I want to let you know, though, that the last time we checked, the estimated cost for that was at the tune of about $167 million per year. That, therefore, creates some questions in my mind. If the government says that they're going to reduce VAT, and if the government says that the coffers don't look as healthy as they thought it would look, then the last government asked the National Health Insurance Authority to take a 10% reduction in its budget and has been hesitant about giving that authority the money it needed to get that catastrophic healthcare off the ground. $167 million is going to be about three times and some silvers more than the $50 million they've been allocated over the last three budgetary cycles. The question then for me is, where are we going to magically find three times the amount of funding? Or are we going to write a new plan? Because I know they spent 2 years building this plan, setting up the authority, putting in place the managing team, and building out the capitated model system. The doctors are all finally on board, and people are finally getting cozy to the idea of NHI. I know they just rolled out recently a new NHI 1.1, right, which added a couple additional things, right? I don't want to speak out of turn here. I know they added the electronic health record system, but do we really have the money to fund the platform that was left by Dr. Robin Roberts and his team, or are we going to work on a new plan? That is the question I also had. Let's go back to the speech from the throne. This one here says, my government also recognizes, applauds, and expresses its gratitude to doctors and nurses, other frontline workers, and volunteers for their meritorious and selfless service during the pandemic. The present economic crisis has left a trail of unprecedented misery among the Bahamian people and our public finances in a dismal state. Despite this bleak outlook, my government will introduce measures that will bring immediate relief to the Bahamian people and to businesses. My government will amend the VAT Act to lower the rate of VAT across the board to 10%. And you see how those two things there therefore creates a question in my mind. How do we fund NHI for catastrophic health care to the tune of three times the amount, nearly four times the amount, actually, while reducing government revenue-generating streams? I don't get that. I need them to clear that up for me. My government will focus on the issues that will rescue, restore, and strengthen the economy. My government will pursue strategies to address the infrastructural needs of the country. My government will pursue measures to stabilize public finances and increase public revenue. My government will implement a debt management plan to address the historic debt burden and deficit. My government will amend the Procurement Act to strengthen provisions for Bahamian participation in government procurement at all levels. My government will amend the Fiscal Responsibility Act to strengthen the independence of the Fiscal Responsibility Council. My government will amend the Public Financial Management Act to ensure full compliance with all existing legislation. My government will amend the Commercial Enterprises Act to ensure that when jobs are being filled, Bahamians receive the highest priority. What does that mean? That was another one that gave me some pause. What does that mean? Because the Commercial Enterprises Bill was done for those companies that require foreign labor so that the companies didn't have the drag of the bureaucracy at the immigration department, and they could bring in their labor and the paperwork would kind of catch up the worker. But what does it mean when you say to me in a speech from the throne, because I'm not really sure what it means, my government will amend the Commercial Enterprises Act to ensure that when jobs are being filled, Bahamians receive the highest priority. That doesn't really say anything to me, because that bill didn't really necessarily focus on Bahamians at all, actually. My government will also introduce measures to encourage renewable energy industries in solar, wind, wave, and ocean thermal energy. My government recommits the Bahamas to a minimum reliance on renewable energy by 30% by 2030. My government will introduce a merchant shipping bill to bring our jurisdiction in line with its international obligations, contemporary practices, and to enhance our competitive edge in the global maritime industry. My government will promote Grand Bahama to harness the power of the maritime industry. My government strongly commits to introducing a number of initiatives to support the growth and development of cultural and creative economy. I want to stop there again, because you say you're going to build hospitals in the Family Islands. You say that you're going to build hospitals in New Providence, right? And I don't really understand, or clinics in the Family Islands, I'm not really sure if we've set out a model for what Grand Bahama will be. Will it be industrial? And if it is, then are we going to facilitate that? Or is it going to be touristic? And then are we going to try to tailor make a tourist product for that? If we have a healthcare crisis, right, let's just forget the whole idea of trying to ever make Lugayen a hotel ever again. That's not going to happen. It's probably never going to happen again. Then are we missing an opportunity there? Are we should we be looking at possibly turning that into a premier medical facility? Should the people we be looking for in investment not necessarily be those from industry, but those that may be in the field of medicine, and then the people that come from medical care could go there, and then that we build the economy of Freeport around that. Maybe just things that I thought about while I was listening to the speech from the drone. This one says, my government strongly commits to introducing a number of initiatives to support the growth and development of the cultural and creative economy. My government will introduce measures to employ Junkanoo culture and the visual performing arts to drive exports in music, costumes, and art. My government will relaunch and formalize the Sport in Paradise program to encourage major international sports federations and leagues to use the Bahamas as a base. Let's stop there again. Then are we looking at Grand Bahama for that? Because they have the space. We know that they have the room capacity. Or are we going to build this in this COVID environment? Are we going to build this as a sports sanctuary of some sort in the island of Exuma somewhere where people can actually use these facilities in a bubble and away from the city's population? Because in this very COVID environment with our very weak healthcare support systems and infrastructure, I don't imagine that anybody wants to bring their million-billion-dollar franchise to a congested island like this, you know, just with such a densely populated area. So we have to figure that model out. Are we going to put it in Grand Bahama? Are we going to build something in Exuma? Chester could kind of have a crown and glory as the Exuma member parliament. My government is committed to achieving greater food security and reducing our reliance on imports as a matter of priority. My government will introduce a regulatory framework for the cannabis industry. My government will introduce legislation to facilitate a comprehensive program of the digitization for the country. My government will restructure the Bahamas Investment Authority to streamline application processes and develop a new marketing strategy. My government will consult with key stakeholders and appropriately amend legislation to provide increased tax incentives and concessions for domestic investors. My government will transform approval processes and launch Bahamas Invest to retain competitiveness and mobilize local and international investors to grow the economy. My government will return tourism to pre-COVID levels by harnessing existing markets. My government will develop an investment portfolio for the Family Islands to promote an investor-friendly environment with a focus on an investment portfolio for specialized industries. My government will undertake infrastructural upgrades throughout all of the islands of the Bahamas in an effort to create investment portfolios. Let us stop there. Revenue generation is down. The world is still in COVID times. People, a lot of them, aren't spending money. Do we need a more specific plan that specifically targets specific islands so that the general economy of the Bahamas does better? And as a consequence, we are then able to look out for those are the smaller economies. Because Mama Dam and Crooked Island ain't really want no big, big, big bunch of investment in Crooked Island, mind. They want fish and farm and that kind of stuff. So are we being Nassau-centric in our thinking surrounding this? Or are we spreading ourselves too thin? Which is also another thing I thought about when I read or when I listened to the speech from the... Well, I read it. I didn't listen to it. I can't listen to the Governor General. He just doesn't read as well as the last Governor General. So it goes on to say, My government will undertake infrastructural upgrades throughout all of the islands of the Bahamas in an effort to create investment portfolios. My government will expand the provision of potable water and implement a national strategy for the management of water as a natural resource. That one got my attention. Let me say this to you all right out front. Please, not for my sake, but for Christ in heaven's sake, right? Do not run more pipe on this family island for miles and miles and miles and miles to facilitate 12 people up through a dirt road. That don't make... We will never recoup the cost of that. Never. Plus, many of these people on these islands already have a system that works. I've been to Cat Island every year from 2007 to now. And I never not had water to bathe in or never not had water to do whatever I wanted. I could wash the car and all. They don't seem to have a water problem to me. So are we fixing a problem, or are we just finding a way to spend the money? Now, the whole using water as a natural resource thing, I think, is a magically brilliant idea. I don't know whose it was, but it was wonderful. Water is becoming such a scarce resource on this planet that it is a godsend that Andres produces the amount of water that it does daily. And as for right now, we just letting it wash back out into the ocean. I'm not saying we even need to look for a market to sell the water, but let me give you a wonderful idea. If we got that much free water, then could we look for a way to allow Bahamians to enjoy potable water free of charge? Maybe it could just be a thing. We don't have to like sell it to nobody. We could just keep it for ourselves. And then that way, if you are a Bahamian citizen, you never, ever, ever, ever pay for water. And then we could agree to take some of them miles and miles and miles of pipe that we won't carry to the family island and put it in Bantown and Grantstown and put it in Farm Road so that cousin them, blacks and them, don't have to keep pushing trolley to these pumps. And Brownie could stop drinking water from the pump. And we don't have to worry about all this cross-contamination at the pump. And we could really start to make the city of New Providence somewhere that is not such a denigrated rut. All right? So I like the whole natural resource water thing. It was brilliant. For all of his flaws, I want to thank Adrian Gibson and them for not letting the people them dig for limestone in Andres. Y'all are brilliant young men. I appreciate y'all. Let's take this water now and see if we can provide some sort of economy, if not just for Androsians, for the entire Bahamas. All right, let's go further. The government will introduce a new progressive building code. We're too far. The government will expand the provisions of potable water and implement a national strategy for the management of water as a natural resource. The government will introduce a new and progressive building code to increase resilience in the face of climate change. The government will expedite the development of airports in Exuma, Grand Bahama, and North Eleuthera, and will advance the development of all major airports across the Bahamas through public-private partnerships. Even as we vigorously pursue avenues of progress throughout our country, my government is mindful that we will not leave behind the most vulnerable or discouraged people in our society. My government will enhance social assistance programs. My government, in collaboration with the private sector and non-governmental organizations, will implement immediate relief measures for Abaco, Grand Bahama, and Ragged Island. Through partnerships with social service, urban renewal, and civil society, including the churches, my government will work to ensure that every Bahamian has life skills, food to eat, clean water, and a roof over their heads. My government will increase the pension for senior citizens. My government will introduce legislation for the protection of consumers. My government will increase the minimum wage and phase in a livable wage. My government will increase the benefits for persons with disabilities and ensure that the provisions of persons with disabilities Equal Opportunities Act are fully implemented and enforced. My government will reintroduce the RISE program, which provided substantial benefits to many families. My government will work with all stakeholders to bring relief to mortgage and rent payers to prevent an increase in and reduce homelessness. My government will introduce legislation to provide for the establishment of an urban renewal authority. That is a brilliant idea. Because what we've done in the past is left urban renewal up to the whim and fancy of the elected government. And we know that it was Christie's baby. And anytime Christie wasn't in power, the baby died. And then Christie would come back to power with resurrection power, and the baby would come back to life. If you give it to an authority, it takes that power away from the politician, and a board and a general manager controls what urban renewal should and will look like. Okay. My government will create second chance program jobs that allows those who have served prison time to enter the job market. As a part of the second chance program, my government will expunge the records of those young people convicted of minor offenses related to the use of marijuana so that they may more easily rejoin the formal productive economy. I'm going to stop right there because I think I'm going to run out of time. Let me see if I can throw two of y'all text messages in. This one here says, new airports in Harbor Island are necessary for promotion. I don't want them to build another airport in Eleuthera, actually. Hi, we have a gold mine of water. Why does water cost as much a gallon? I don't know. Mr. Miller, it is said that the former Minister of Health was sobbing post-election. 8 days, election day, I don't understand what this says. This one here says, leaving what the school on Jane Street name, BBC. Congratulations, Prince William, on 60 years. Okay. You think I could squeeze 10 more seconds of the speech in? Let's try. It goes on to says, my government is fully committed to ensuring that citizens of the Bahamas feel safe and secure and will address crime and its associated social ills by adopting a holistic, multifaceted approach. My government will continue to strengthen the Royal Bahamas Police Force to battle crime and preserve the peace and the Royal Bahamas Defense Force to better defend our territorial sovereignty. My government will transform the Bahamas Department of Correctional Services into a rehabilitative institution in alignment with its mandate. My government, after the broadest consultation with stakeholders, will seek to reform the electoral process in the Bahamas. My government is fully committed to ensuring that our economy works for all Bahamians. My government will amend the Hotels Encouragement Act to provide better incentives for Bahamian-owned and joint venture boutique hotels related to tourism. My government will introduce legislation to create tax incentives for small and medium business-sized enterprises owned by Bahamians. My government will reestablish harmonious tripartite relationships between labor, employers, and the government. My government will ensure that all labor issues are addressed as a matter of priority. My government will advance the overall effectiveness of the public service through the expansion of training programs to assist in proper skill set placement, customer service, and revenue enhancement, also by implementing a digitization to provide efficiency in clearing backlogs within the Ministry of Public Service. That is a speech from the throne. You heard what they said. I told you what it was I heard. I'm Levin Miller. We're smack out of time. This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news and smart talk. They've got the news that happens now.